Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance. But if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McKusick, and it's time to review the offense from that Broncos game. A happy review this will be after a 41-10 win. And here joining me to do it is Jordan Coe. Jordan, how you doing?
Good, Ken. Thanks for having me on. Happy indeed. At least on the, well, both sides of the ball this week.
Yeah. Pleasure to do the show always. I think there's some reasons. We did the defensive show already. If you haven't listened to it, go back and take a listen. It's got a lot in there, but I think it's not a highly replicatable formula for the Ravens to win the way they did. They gave up a lot of ample time and space to Bo Nix, and he missed a lot of throws. And that was something that very few quarterbacks have done against the Ravens this year so far.
It's about time.
Yeah. We deserved a nice one like that. But back to the salt mines, having to face a quarterback like Joe Burrow, a decent receiving core, depending on who plays, of course, but it's still a decent receiving core no matter what with the Cincinnati Bengals. And last time they played, Joe Burrow was 140 yards better than expectation. And that will not be good for the Ravens secondary if that were to happen again. This game, though, Lamar made everything right against Denver.
I mean, Lamar is just, he's unbelievable. And, you know, obviously two-time MVP already up to this point, clear, or maybe not clear front runner, but clearly one of the top horses in the MVP race. If the numbers are, if he continues to sustain the numbers that we've seen from him, you know, at this pace, it's going to be really hard to keep him off the board there. And he's just, I mean, he's just doing everything right now. I mean, we saw a quarterback that was clearly either intentionally trying not to run or saving himself a bit for the Cincinnati game from a body perspective, tendering the knee a little bit, though it didn't look like it. When he had to run, he looked fine. I don't think that there was any kind of physical concerns that showed up to me on the film. And so you mix all that in, and I mean, what isn't he doing right now?
Yeah, I'll take the other side of that coin and say I think he did look a little less nimble moving around the pocket, but 90% of Lamar is still 160% of most other quarterbacks, so even the mobile ones. So that was really impressive nonetheless. Ravens' offensive line did not give him a bunch of ample time and space. They had an okay game overall. They, you know, most of it was run blocking, honestly. It was 35 snaps of that and only 34 and 20 plays that resulted in a pass or sack. But they really didn't do a good job. They only gave him ample time and space three times the entire game, 15% of the time, where Nick's had it 58% of the time, which was more than double last year's rate for the 2023 Ravens, who gave up ample time and space 26% of the time.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Lamar's movement in the pocket looked really excellent in this game. His ability to slide, move around, except for the one sack that he took early where he could have stepped up, but that gap was closing quickly from the left side too. Just impressive stuff overall from Lamar. But, you know, I don't know where the decision tree is for teams to decide how they want to defend him at this point, because I think you have to do what, I mean, you don't have to, but Derrick Henry is going to maul you if you put six guys in the box regularly. Mm-hmm. And if you aren't blitzing him and you're giving Lamar ample time and space, then it's even worse than it is. I don't think there's another formula that we're going to see from defenses for the rest of the year. I think this is just what you have to do. And if this is just what we're going to have to get from Lamar, then they're just going to put 35 plus points or close to it every week. And if you look at the Cleveland game, it would have been 34 they wouldn't have gone for it on fourth down early in the game, and Tucker wouldn't have missed the kick late in the game. So, I mean, this is unless there's some odd luck things happening for this team, this is a team that is going to put up 30 plus points easily and probably 35 plus points every week, as long as we keep seeing this version of Lamar.
Yeah, I mean, from a DeVoe perspective in particular, they're even better than the 2019 team. I don't think they're quite as good in some ways, points per drive being the big one, that they're a little bit behind, but they are closing in. They're at 2.95 points per drive right now, which is extraordinary. And that 2019 team was at 3.08. I'm going to get back to the thing you just said, though, about, you know, how do you defend it? The Ravens are just doing an excellent job right now of making run pass decisions, what appears to be at the line of scrimmage. So they'll have a couple plays called, they'll have Henry in the backfield, they'll be ready to run. I mean, it's simple count of box stuff a lot of the time. And if you're at the game, I mean, just look at it. If you're on TV, just look at it. And you see, you know, when there are seven men in the box, they're very likely to run. When the six men in the box, they just about always will run unless it's a third and long. They're doing a great job of finding the guys who are getting open just as they get open, beating man coverage when the box is really stacked.
The only thing that I wish they would do, like, and they have done so many things that I think a lot of us fans have been asking for a long time. The only thing I wish they would do is I wish they would stay with personnel and go quick to the line. No, that doesn't mean they have to be quick to the snap, but quick to the line when they feel like they've got advantages. It still feels like they sub a lot. And I know that maybe that's Harbaugh, maybe that's philosophy from keeping guys healthy, etc. But you saw the Patriots do this when they were kind of at their prime 12 personnel with Hernandez and Gronk. They would just get up to the line and they would make you get to the line. They would make you wait, which wears out defenders too. They would still run the clock down and then they would just take advantage of teams that way. And the reason that I say that now is what you just said about checks at the line. It's clear that it's more than one call that's coming into Lamar right now. Those things can then be played down the string, you know, and I think a good example, I don't know if anybody that's listening watched the Kansas City game last night, but when Tampa didn't go for it, or when Tampa called the timeout from the 1 yard line, when they were trying to score that touchdown, I thought that they should have run it first. Cause if they score at the 1 yard line, they've got the call for that play action pass on the next play, which is they already like, right? So if you can mm-hmm. score, if you can just get 1 yard there, then you've got something in your belt, right? And I would like for the Ravens to do things like that, where they run a play, they saw what the defense was trying to do. They're going to get to the line quickly, so they keep the personnel, they keep the scheme, they keep something that they're trying to attack, and they know that they've got another thing that can go right after whatever that thing is in the pocket and really gash folks. But I mean, this is picking nits at this point. I mean,
right.
It's hard to complain.
One of the big things about what you're talking about is if they effectively go to the line of scrimmage with the same organized the same way, meaning they've got the slot receiver on the same side, and they're not switching where Flowers is, and you know, our two tight ends are both right, for example. You got the same backfield set up. The team you're facing doesn't have a lot of choices in terms of doing things differently. They could call some sort of a blitz and do that differently. A couple linemen could agree on a stunt or something, but most of the times, the look you got last time, you can try and beat that again. It's very hard for pass rushers to maintain that energy level over a drive of even four or five plays. If you run them and you keep those same guys on the field at the line of scrimmage. And there are big benefits from it. I'd love to see that. I think that might be the next level for Lamar in terms of how to progress with this. And it'd be interesting to see how the Ravens do it. They certainly work rotationally at other positions where they can have people in for an entire series. They've done it with the offensive line. They've done a cornerback, for example. So they can do it. It's just doing it with wide receivers is not something the Ravens have typically done. They want to get fresh legs into the game and deal with that way. There are benefits to that too, by the way. It's not like there's not value in that, but I do see value in what you're saying.
And the other thing would also be to keep key defenders off the field in some instances, right? So like if you, because the Ravens do the same thing, right? When certain sub packages happen, and I feel like the Patriots in particular would run no huddle against Baltimore back in those days, because they knew they liked to sub. They knew that they were catching them off guard, and sometimes they could catch somebody off the field. And when that person was off the field, they weren't not going to let them come back onto the field. And so in that same way, there are times where if you can get if it's early down on a first and 10 and like TJ Watt or Max Crosby type is taking a breather, I'm good. I'm getting back to the line and I'm making them try and hustle the switches, make the tough calls, make them just do another small thing to keep them on their heels. And I think they're going to need whenever the time comes that they go back up against Kansas City, they're going to need some other thing in the mix, because Spags has got them well coached. They know what they're doing. They have they played Baltimore a lot. They're like a divisional opponent at this point. They have a good sense for what Baltimore's tendencies are. They have to make some kind of adjustment and add some kind of wrinkle. And that could be one. That's like I said, that's the one thing that I think that this team could add. I don't know what else it could be.
Yeah. No, I think that sounds like a great idea. It would make a lot of sense. Got a few other things going on from this game. Broncos also have a very good tackling team. It's one of the few other good tackling teams the Ravens have faced. Now, if you haven't been following this last couple defensive shows, Ravens are far and away the best tackling team in the entire NFL. And I'll just mute you for a second if you need to do something there. But the closest is the Steelers. The Steelers are well back, but the Ravens have under a 10% missed tackle rate right now, and really hoping that is something they can keep up for the season, because it's a special place they are. It's also something that Orr, I think, has brought to this team. So they don't really Orr is being bashed a lot, obviously, because the defense in general is not playing well. But they're playing good run defense, and they're not allowing a lot of yards after the catch. And a lot of that's a function of good tackling.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing about the Ravens' ability when we're talking about it on the offensive side to create missed tackles is that we're not talking about like, I mean, I feel like it's hard to quantify this, but I do feel like you see it against Kansas City a lot, where like they're either just bad approaches, bad angles, like they're just not getting there to make tackles. I feel mm-hmm. like the Ravens are creating a lot of scenarios where guys are just, they're doing the same thing now, where it's bad angles. It's difficult to be able to make some of the tackles. They've got obviously different guys that can make you miss in different ways. Flowers is going to make you miss much differently than Derrick Henry is going to make you miss. But the Ravens just create that mismatch for teams. And no matter how good you are on defense in terms of what your discipline and what your approach is, it's just going to be tough. And it's not cold yet. And the one, you know, the thing that I think Lamar has progressed the most on this year is his ability to throw what appears to be a much more catchable ball. I think that if you go back and look at the first few years of Lamar throwing some of those like deep posts and things that we saw to Hollywood, they were bullets. Those were balls that were thrown hard, and they didn't have like the Justice Hill pass this week is a really great example where he just dropped that ball into a bucket for him. Same with Ricard, quite frankly. If Lamar would have thrown that pass to Ricard in this game, like he did, like he didn't in the Andrews Kansas, like to the, in the one pass, I think it was against Kansas City where Andrews was running out into the flat and Lamar basically threw, it wasn't a Joe Flacco bullet, but he threw it basically right at his hands. If he would have lofted it, put a little bit of air under it, given him a chance to go and get it, I think Andrews would have had a shot at that ball. And that's what I think he did with Ricard this year. So I think we're seeing him throw the ball a little bit better. I think we'll see guys make a few more catches in December and January because of that, because he's throwing it a little bit differently. And I think it's a huge progression in his game.
The other part of that is probably that he's throwing the ball within the frame in a good spot for receivers. And also he's getting more. I mean, some of the times, like the throw to Flowers, that was, it's one of the over the middle throws where he had to throw it slightly behind Flowers because all the coverage was kind of to the front part of him. Flowers knew how to just turn and get that ball, and his receivers are doing more to get the balls that are maybe right on the margin of the frame. But Lamar's also putting him in there. I the laser beams he's throwing and how they are placed top to bottom on receiver and left to right on receiver, very impressive this year. They've just been very catchable footballs. All right, let's move on a little bit. Keaton Mitchell may play this Thursday night. What's your feeling about this? Do they wait, hold him off till Pittsburgh? Because I don't think they're saying yet.
Yeah, well, we saw Collier get released, so I think that might signal that Keaton's going to play. I think if he plays, we're going to see him get 5 to 10 snaps, maybe 5. I think he needs to get his feet under him a little bit, but I mean, if he's healthy and ready to play, he's healthy and ready to play, right? Like that's the question to me. So if you're getting a green light from, you know, your medical team that he's ready to play, and the few videos that we've seen of him in practice, he looks thicker and stronger, but you're hearing from the team that he's just as fast as he used to be. If that's the case, I mean,
what else are they going to say?
Oh, right. True. That is true. So you don't have to say anything, right?
Yeah.
I think that's the difference, right? Like if everyone was like, oh, like we don't think that, like Rashad Bateman didn't get faster this offseason, nobody had any comments about that, right? Like there weren't any, like it wasn't a comment that happened. So you don't have to volunteer that. And I think that would be the gamesmanship of that would be even be, I think, maybe beyond Harbaugh, but maybe not, because he loves that kind of stuff. But I think if he's ready to play, you let him play. You know, yeah. I think you want to see Derrick Henry reduce his snaps, right? You want to see all these guys reduce their snaps. And if you have the opportunity to give 3 more carries late in the game to Mitchell, and I think those toss plays can be just as successful to Keaton Mitchell as they can be to Derrick Henry, if we're seeing them implemented the same exact way, I don't have any problem with him getting on the field.
Well, I don't either. And I don't think it necessarily is replacing either Hill or Henry. I think he'll be a pony backfield, slot receiver, guy coming in motion, gives you tremendous value, much more even than a Flowers or Deontay Johnson in terms of running the ball. You know, plus gives you all that misdirection that the Ravens really need to drive their offense, which is very valuable. So anyway, I'm excited to see him back. I hope it's Thursday, but if they have to wait till the Pittsburgh game, they have to wait to the Pittsburgh game. The other guy who you haven't mentioned here is Rasheen Ali, who could be the guy to replace Collier for a week. We really don't know. So he could come back in. Collier was cut in order to make room for White, which we need to talk about. We'll do right away. They have, and the next cut that comes may not be a cut. It may be an IRing of Ali for the year to add Mitchell to the roster. All right. Well, Tre'Davious White acquired today from the LA Rams. It's 5 years almost to the day since the Ravens acquired Marcus Peters from the Rams. And it, in a lot of ways, it's a similar move. You have a guy who's been a star in the league for a while, has coming off some injuries. He has not been effective this year, not even one little bit. 11.6 yards per target, 147 or so passer rating against, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions. There's not one good number to pull out of his play this year. And he was then inactive for some games as well. I think he might have been a healthy scratch for some. It's not just been a matter of injuries. So the Rams basically, you know, got the Ravens to take the contract off their hands for basically zero net trade value. What do you think of trade?
I mean, the Ravens could use another corner, just in general. If TJ Tampa is not going to see the field and we're not going to be able to evaluate that, if Jalen Armour Davis is not going to maintain consistent health, we've seen Wiggins be a little bit squishy in terms of health as well. Obviously, Marlon's got his knee issue. Can't have enough corners here. They could use help at safety too. Like if he can fill into some of those like free safety snaps and actually be fine in that role, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't hurt, right? Because the cost is zero. And if he plays exceptionally well, if we get Tre'Davious White from, you know, a few years ago in Buffalo, then it's a massive win, right? Because then all of a sudden you can have Wiggins, Humphrey, and White be your three main guys. And I mean, I think that's really the question. I think you and I have talked about whether or not the Ravens should have extended Brandon Stevens. And I was against it for the number that when we talked about it last, whatever number you had thrown out, I was kind of against it. I think he's a guy that probably isn't back. I think, you know, at this stage, he just lacks. He's very much Marlon Humphrey in his rookie year, but he's been around too long to still not be able to have those ball skills and the ability to get his head around to be able to find the ball. It's just he's sticky enough, but teams know that even if he's sticky, they can throw against him and there's no concern of an interception and there's no concern of sometimes even a pass breakup. And if that's the case, then he's killing you, because if he's on the outside, you can only do so much to bracket and help on the outside as well.
And he may be a favorite corner, favorite shoulder corner too. So he may want to play on that right side 100% of the time. In those circumstances, he's typically guarding the X receiver, a kind of a big bodied guy, very good back shoulder opportunities on that side. That's really been his biggest weakness. Not really getting beat over the top as much as it's getting beat coming back to the football. Which still can result in some decent yak against a cornerback like Stevens, but just the fact that it almost always is going to be a first down completion is not a good thing. So we've seen big receivers like Keon Coleman have big games against him, and T. Higgins and others. And the Ravens need to avoid that. You know, you've got a lot of that with Higgins and Pickens and others in the division that you just can't afford to have that be a matchup you face every week. So it's an interesting idea of whether you could get White, if White were to excel, and I really don't think this is a Peters pickup where he's going to get a chance to be put in right away on short notice and take over for somebody. I think it'll be a while before he sees the field.
And you don't, and even if Steven sees his time, sorry to cut you off. Even if Steven's time ramps down there, it doesn't mean that White is the first guy up. Like, it could still be a Wiggins, Humphrey, Mollett combination. And I think that as long as we can get out of Thursday's game, all health considered, with the extra time to get healthy, I think that's the main set of corners you're going to see when it comes to the Pittsburgh game. So again, you now have 2.5 weeks of White being able to settle in, not having to rush him. I mean, you know, it does beg the question of whether or not Stevens plays better facing the ball as opposed to his back to the ball. And I know you're in the camp of people that didn't want to see Stevens get jerked around and see him at safety, see him at corner, like let him play one position. Let's see what happens. I mean, maybe you get to a point where we flip that back over to safety now and say, hey, you're in the safety mix for the rest of the year. Let's cut Eddie Jackson. I know at least 15 people that would be happy if that happened tomorrow.
Yeah, no, and you can include me in that group. But the thing about Stevens moving away from corner is that it would really reduce his market value after the season. He knows it and he'd be pissed. I mean, he would really be pissed about that. I could he be talked into it because it's the right move for the team and they can win and they it's a fairly substantial personal sacrifice for him to do that. It's not like it's his choice.
He's not his other choice could be, right now.
Oh no, he certainly is not. And if his other choice is you're not on the field at all, then that, you know, that obviously, well, let me have that. What was that first option again? You know, it's he really have to think about it. Anyway.
Well, if Ardarius Washington continues to play well, I mean, there might just not be a spot for Stevens to be able to absorb snaps anyway. I mean, I think that, you know, it was great to see him make that pick this week after dropping one that was kind of in his hands the prior week. So, like, you see a little bit of improvement, luck, call it what you will, you know, there for a defensive back. But, you know, I like the combination of Williams, Hamilton, and Washington as those safeties, especially with Mollett back as your potential slot option. So then, like, Hamilton is even more, a bit more multifaceted in terms of what you can do with him. So, it's interesting because the Ravens have spent, and I know we're talking about the offense, but they chose not to invest a lot of money on the offensive line this year. As an inverse of that, they have more money invested in the defense than you would think for a team that's running the offense that it is. And actually, I haven't seen any numbers about this, but like what the cap allocation is for the Ravens offense versus its performance has got to be really counterbalanced to some of these other premium offenses.
Well, the 2019 Ravens were the poster child for that. They had Lamar first contract. That Yanda was about the only big contract on the offense. Actually, that's not true. Stanley was still on his first contract. First round draft pick, but still on his first contract. So yeah, it was extremely cheap offense there. Let's move on a little bit. We got to talk about some other things about the offense. They lost the snap count 68 to 54. Wasn't a good game to do that for defensive reasons. Went into that on the defensive shows. I don't want to do it again, but they certainly wore out the four guys that they wanted to play on the defensive line. The offense really bailed the team out with a 12 first down to nothing, 14 to nothing in terms of scoreboard. However many plays it was, only six in the third quarter for the Broncos. The offensive defense really turned it around at that point and made it a game that they could get through to the end without having to use Travis Jones, which I think would have been very bad if they had to, or putting the game in jeopardy. You know, they had a two touchdown lead at the half. They scored coming right out of the half, but all but put the game away against a, you know, pedestrian offense like Denver's. And then they kept putting their foot on the gas, which was nice to see also.
Yeah, well, you have a – I mean, we definitely saw, and I haven't gotten a chance to listen to your prior podcast, but we saw more Dean Pease-style Ravens defense from this defense against Denver. I think we're going to continue. I think there's no reason why you shouldn't do that, right? Like, don't allow these big plays. Use a cover two, cover four quarters basis, right? Keep the ball in front of you. Get tight in the red zone when you have to, and let your guys win one-on-one and hope you get a couple turnovers in that mix. I mean, that formula is going to win the Ravens 95% of their games, you know, if they can follow it. And so I think you're going to continue to see this offense also, because if they're going to make plays that are 30, 40 plus yards consistently and multiple of them, you're going to see an offense that is going to lose the snap count regularly. And I think you're going to be happy with it.
It is probably going to happen some. They run the ball effectively. They get a lot of first downs, like a lot of first downs per play run from scrimmage, which get into some of that later. But I did talk about that on the defensive show a fair amount. And I do have the opposite feeling as you've just described here. Here's my issue, and I'll explain it. And then, you know, as two rational people, we'll discuss it out a little bit. But the Ravens really benefited from Bo Nix being Bo Nix in this game. That they gave him an opportunity set that was unbelievable, and he undershot his opportunity set by about 61 yards in this game. But you compare that to what Burrow did to them just a few weeks ago, and he outplayed his opportunity set, outthrew his opportunity set by 140 yards. That's kind of the difference there. I think you can win this kind of a game if the quarterback is average or a little bit below. I don't think you can win it playing the form. Okay, it's a lot harder to win it. Let me put it that way. If you have to face quarterbacks who are good and they're able to pick you apart with those kind of opportunity sets, which means I think what the Ravens are going to have to do is go to more high-risk, high-return defense. That means more blitzes, more scheming up of pressure, more taking chances of allowing big plays on the back end. But in exchange, they get some stops for it. They get some turnovers for it with pressure, and they get the other plays, sacks, penalties, and big losses that will help fuel end of drive situations. So I'd be in favor of that. And it's interesting because you're saying Dean Pease is the perfect guy to have in Orr's ear. And I'm saying, I want Wink Martindale or Rex Ryan in Orr's ear. And I actually said that on the radio today.
Calm down. Yeah. I mean,
this is the kind of defense that benefits from that. This is
I mean, for sure. I think that there's a mix between the two of those, though, right? I think that you can show looks that give you seven up front, right? And you give the deceiving looks, but you still only blitz four and you stay in a cover four quarter shell on top of that. So you can get the best of both worlds where you are. So, and the difference that I would give you is that the reason that Joe Burrow was plus 140 and yards of expectation was 65 yards on a play to Jamar Chase, where he caught the ball behind the line of scrimmage. And then Malik Harrison blocked himself out of the play. And then Chase just went to the races. And the other was a blown coverage where if you were in a standard cover four, that pass would never have been completed to Jamar Chase. Right. So whatever you do underneath that four shell, right? Like, and if you think of this from like a Madden perspective, your two outside corners and your two safeties are in your like deep blues, right? In terms of trying to keep everything in front of them. And you, yeah, maybe you're going to give up something in like the 15 to 20 yard range, especially when you're in the middle of the field sometimes, but you show different deceptive looks underneath that. You can take away some of the stuff. You can take, particularly the first Joe Burrow touch or the first Jamar Chase touchdown, which was an abomination, the fact that he took that. The Ravens usually defend those screen passes exceptionally well against Cincinnati. That was just, I think, just a little bit of luck, right? And then if you keep everything else in front of you, I don't know. I think teams just start to get itchy, and you create a circumstance where the Ravens offense is going to be up, and they're going to be up early. You know, teams are going to they're going to have to make decisions about whether or not they want the ball first instead of want the ball second, because they don't want to let the Ravens get up on them. And that's just like an interesting dynamic overall. If you defer and let the Ravens get the ball in the second half, and you see what the Ravens do in this game where you score and you score, and on both sides of that halftime, they become almost impossible to beat no matter what the defense is. And so I would rather be more conservative and force teams to beat you and force teams to, you know, go all the way down the field. I mean, part of this is just that the Ravens have given up too many 25 plus yard plays, right? Like, take those out of the formula, make them beat you 4, 5, 7 yards at a time and do it the whole way down the field every single time. I think some of this stuff that we're seeing won't hold up as well.
Okay, well, it's against average opponents. I certainly hope it won't. I hope that the Pittsburgh Steelers ended up being an average quarterback, an average offense that can't really get it going. And then I'm in favor of the play the standard average, medium, normal defenses all the more. And that is what they did in this game. I mean, they didn't really blitz hardly at all. It was like 7 out of 38. That's numbers. And they came from off ball. It was very limited. They only had 2 stunts the entire game. They basically shut down stunting in this game, it appeared, or told them don't agree on any stunts on the field because we need to cage rush this guy. And they even so, they didn't really control him, and he had some ridiculous amount, like 352 or something in terms of average time to throw. He had forever back there. He's patting the football. He was waiting on people to break open. He's running around, getting free, and then coming up and sometimes not making a very effective pass even then. But this is not something that you're gonna have an opportunity to do against the bulk of the better quarterbacks. And it's one of the few times where I think you can't win that way in the playoffs. When I normally hear that from someone, I say it's a pile of bullshit. They don't know what you need to win in the playoffs. And, oh, you got to have a great pass rush. You got to have this. Look, I mean, teams that go to the playoffs tend to be good at pretty much everything or somewhat good or not bad, at least, at pretty much everything. But it doesn't mean you have to have that thing. And you know, in the case of this, however, I think your most challenging games in the playoffs will be against good quarterbacks, and against good quarterbacks will take advantage of what it is you don't do well. And that's why I think it's important to force those quarterbacks into some bad decisions, as opposed to letting them make passively defending them and letting them make unforced errors. Cause I think they'll make a lot less of them. So that's what they did against next.
We'll see more of those stunts. I mean, obviously with Tupu and Wormley coming in super late here, you weren't going to see a lot of complexity in terms of what the Ravens were trying to do across the line. It was going to have to be a pure win against the guy against you kind of thing. I think Denver expected that, and the Ravens returned the favor by doing that. I think once Jones and Pierce, knock on wood, return, then that dynamic changes pretty significantly. Likewise with Urban, you see all of those things will change. I mean, if you look at the last two games and the fact that Pierce, Jones, Urban, Humphrey, and Wiggins have all missed significant chunks of those two games.
Yep.
This is not, I mean, this is not the defense that we're going to see, or hopefully this is not the defense that, the Ravens are going to be playing with when it comes down to crunch time too.
Well, I certainly hope so. And the fact that they didn't acquire an interior defensive lineman today, I hope is a good indication that they understand the prognosis for Pierce and for Jones in particular, who drives the pass rush, and they know they'll be back soon enough that it won't be a big problem. But hopefully they're not wrong on that, because, you know, when we have foot and ankle injuries for big men, those freaking things can linger and be a nasty, nasty thing. So
I was just going to say the late bye is really helpful here too, that the Ravens ideally can get healthy then, depending on what, I mean, it's also kind of nice that Kansas City's running away with a one seed, right? Like we won't be playing for the one seed. You've got the head-to-head tiebreaker already against Buffalo, right? Like take care of business here against Cincinnati and Pittsburgh over the next few weeks. And they have a pretty clear pathway to the two or the three seed if that's the case. And so health then becomes the top priority as you work your way down the stretch too.
They need to beat Pittsburgh, Houston. And two of those are in consecutive weeks on a short rest, on a 4-day rest.
Aren't all three of them? Isn't it like Pittsburgh, Houston, Pittsburgh?
I think it's Pittsburgh, Houston, because we play Pittsburgh before Houston on Christmas Day. And we play in Pittsburgh on a Saturday night, I think, which is short rest for Pittsburgh too, by the way. And then they go to Houston after that for a Wednesday.
Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance. But if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Day game. And so if they win those three, they'll be in the catbird seat for the number two seed. No doubt about it. It's theirs to lose. And I, you know, maybe Buffalo plays well enough that they end up with one less loss somewhere along the line, but those are three of the Ravens' really tough games too. So hopefully they otherwise take care of business. Let's get back to the offense here. Talk a little bit about that. They faced a defense that had effective pass rushers and really effective pass rushers across the defensive line. They had them on the edge. They have them on the inside. Nick Benito's having a good season. Franklin Myers having a good season. He got a sack in this one. It shouldn't maybe bother me or shouldn't be as unexpected that the Ravens had a low ATS game with only 15%, but it's still not good. Is there anything you can take from the offensive line's performance in this game? We'll talk about the offensive line in detail later, that you would say, yeah, that really worked out well in terms of pass blocking against this group of pass rushers?
I mean, I think that your take here is right. It was just kind of like a blasé, we didn't have some of the blow up plays. Obviously McCarrie had a couple holes, big penalties, whether or not you want to accept that they were penalties or not. They had a couple big penalties and a couple big moments, which ultimately didn't end up making a difference. And somehow this offense is so good that penalties apparently don't affect their ability to create outcomes. But yeah, I mean, they're fine. They're getting the performance at about the level of which the Ravens have paid for and invested draft capital into this group.
Okay. That's seeing it a different way. There you go. but it was all about Jackson making additional space, moving around in that pocket in a way that was particularly great. I thought the receivers came through excellent separation versus man coverage. Sad to see Bateman have a couple of regression steps these last 2 weeks with three total drops, but he's still over 10 yards per target. Incredibly, the Ravens receivers this year, they're all of the receivers. I'm including Ricard. I'm including all the running backs in this group. But everybody who's been targeted on a pass, if you look at their Pro Football Focus targets, which takes out the targets that are basically thrown out of bounds or thrown away by the quarterback, and it cuts it down by about 25 targets or so, the Ravens have a team yards per target north of 10 for this season. It's incredible, isn't it?
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Well, and some of these big, massive screenplays have made a big difference. I mean, and just going back to the offensive line real quick here, it does seem like, and it's almost more important than whatever your offensive line is going to do is what they do. And that Lamar knows where their weaknesses are, where they're trying to push guys to. You know, we've talked about this, you know, with Ravens tackles over the years, where if they're the kind of guy that is going to push the offense or the outside linebacker up or the end up past where that pocket is, and the quarterback and the tackle are in alignment on what they're trying to get done there, then they can be successful. So maybe we don't see this Mahler performance, right, or this amazing pass blocking performance, but maybe there is something to Lamar has some idea, or they are synced up a little bit more together in terms of what they're trying to force the pass rush to do, which allows Lamar to be successful in terms of what he's seeing. So maybe on that first sack that he took, part of what they're trying to accomplish there is to let Lamar drop even deeper, because we've seen Lamar take some really deep drops and straight deep drops too this year. And maybe that was one of those plays and maybe it got blown up accordingly. And so, yeah, as a fan, you look at that and you're like, oh, come on, you're supposed to step up. But maybe there's some kind of part of that call and some part of what they're trying to do where that's not supposed to be what the outcome is designed to create. And so maybe there's something to kind of the synchronicity. Is that a word? Of the offensive.
It's an album.
of the offensive line and Lamar, which lets him have some of this really unbelievable pocket presence that we've seen. Now, obviously, two or three times a game, Lamar does something and you're just like, oh my gosh, how did he do that? But the rest of the, I mean, and particularly in this game, it felt like Lamar was sliding around the pocket and kind of had some really clear intentions about what he was trying to do. And the routes seemed to be in sync with that movement as well. Now, that just might be really great play from Lamar. Like, I don't want to take that away from him, but there could be an undercurrent of play call and practice and cohesion there that's adding to that.
Okay, so I can maybe add one data point to this, or more than one data point, because Ronnie Stanley's been that tackle for a lot of years, is he's always been one who sacrificed giving ground in the pocket, sacrificed pocket space in exchange for mirroring. And I think the whether it's a spoken agreement or not between him and Lamar is that his job is to keep the hands of that defender off Lamar, but it doesn't mean he's not going to occasionally get backed up into his space and he's going to have to do something about it. And Lamar's been terrific at moving around the pocket and going places. 12-6 blocking is an automatic opportunity to get Lamar out into green fields. And we saw in this game what that produced, which I thought was a really important thing to realize what Lamar was trying to do on two plays where he rolled to the right sideline away from pressure. Okay. Delay, finally throws the ball away twice, two times in this game, both of them defensive holds. He gave those plays time to develop by his patience at not throwing the ball away, which I thought was just absolutely terrific. Got first downs, obviously, both times. All right, let's move on a little bit. Talk about 141 yak out of 280 passing yards. The Ravens have been bouncing back a little bit on this, but their first games of the season were much more yak as a contribution to total passing yards. For the last few weeks, it's been much more air yards. And a lot of that's because Zay Flowers is catching the ball further from the line of scrimmage. And in this game, he still made a great yak play, obviously, and we had that. But there's still, you know, barely a 50% yak in a game like this. And I thought this has been one of the developments that I've really appreciated about Lamar. Lamar, in this last game, by the way, his completed air yards on average was higher than his intended air yards on average. Think about that for a moment. That means his average pass was like about 1 yard longer. I think it was 0.8. longer among the completions than it was for the intended. It's almost always in the other direction by 2, 3, 4, 5 yards. You'll take a couple deep shots. You have a much lower percentage chance of completing those. And then that'll boost up your intended air yards, but your completed air yards will suffer because you have screen passes that you're completing like 100% of those. So remarkable game from that perspective.
I mean, like his ability to throw the ball, to lead receivers, to throw catchable balls, everything that he's doing from an arm perspective this year is incredible. If you remember back to, I think it was the first San Diego game of his rookie year where he just turfed a ball, yes, like 2 feet in front of him. And what we see from him as a passer now is just like an unbelievable testament to this man's work ethic, his tremendous commitment to improve something that he wasn't good at. Like when he wasn't good at it, and he is now, and to the tune that he is as good as anybody else in the NFL at it.
It's already shaping up like an unbelievably great contract that the Ravens signed to. It's a good deal. Don't want to talk too much about third down efficiency. They're 8 for 26 now in the last three games, which has dropped them down to fifth in the NFL in third down efficiency. But it really hasn't hurt the Ravens' overall efficiency. They've rolled up a ton of first downs. They still lead the NFL in first downs by almost 2 per game over the closest team, which is, I think it's Tampa Bay at like 22.8, and they're at 24.6. They lead the NFL in red zone TD percentage at 74.4. There's only one other team, Tampa Bay, over 70. They have 5.8 points per red zone drive. Cincinnati has 5.62, so they're close in that regard. And like I said, the 2.97 points per drive is second to the Commanders now at 3.19. Now, that's not going to hold up. Still a very impressive number from the Commanders.
We keep hearing this term thrown around that it's an historic offense that the Ravens are putting up this year. I mean, the Pittsburgh games worry me a little bit because they seem to have something that can really slow the Ravens down. But if the Ravens can roll it up on the Steelers twice this year, then I mean, I think we're going to see one of the three best offenses that have ever, and we're going to see one of the three best offenses ever. And I think they're going to be better at the end of this year than the 2019 offense was, which is to say that the 2019 offense faded. And once whatever happened to Mark Ingram that ultimately led to his retirement, I think happened somewhere around the middle of the year for the Ravens. And I don't know if it was an injury. I don't know if it was just age. I don't know, whatever that was. Whenever that went away, the offense started to slowly kind of like dip over the end. And it was still a really great offense, but it wasn't what it was the first 8 weeks of that season. I think that we are seeing the opposite of that progression. If you think about what we got from the Kansas City game in week one, building and growing and progressing this to see what Lamar is doing against the blitz. There is no book against him now. I think we could see a team that the odds wouldn't be, you would get a great return on something like this, but you could see a team that reasonably will score 35 points every game to end the year.
They are one of the great teams in NFL history. I said last night on the defensive pod, I didn't really get a sense of whether this point got across, but this is effectively the 1966 Beatles on offense. The only way you can fuck this thing up, and really about the only way, is to introduce Yoko Ono into the equation. And the way you get Yoko Ono in this equation is get a high-priced free agent onto the payroll now who affects you next year. And it will force the band to break up because they're going to have to let some of the young core of talent go. They've got good talent, good young core on defense too. If they can just hold it together and make sure they can sign the players they have, they're set. They don't really need a lot of outside help. And what they do, they're very adept at getting edge rushers for cheap and finding those. They really do not need a ton of help from outside the organization over the next couple of years. I mean, now in 25, I would say, and you know, their big loss next year is going to be Stevens. That's going to be their big loss in terms of free agency.
Yeah. And I mean, at the end of the day, this all goes back to your question earlier about the Ravens at the trade deadline. And, you know, one of it is prognosis of health for Jones and for Pierce. Yeah. But I think also part of it is, this isn't where we need to invest. We need these picks in house. We need contracts to stay cheap. We don't need somebody coming in here that is going to want something, a big deal or whatever that looks like, or any of those things. You know, I think that a guy like Chase Young was a guy that Ravens could have gone out and got if they really wanted to, but that was going to create, like you said, it was going to create an internal decision around what they needed to do around something like that. And a really big playoffs from somebody like that could throw it all out of whack. There's a lot of talent on this team, like you said, on both sides of the ball. It's controllable. It's young. It's a good time to be a Ravens fan.
Yeah, this is option time. That's for sure. And they have some players they're gonna let walk next year. I mean, I think we identified Stevens not gonna be around. Neither Jackson nor Williams will be around. Not that Jackson is that big a deal. Eddie Jackson we're talking about now, obviously. And then they're gonna let Mark Andrews walk. Would be my feeling that the time is right given the amount of money. Some of that will depend on Isaiah likely coming back. They'll also be able to bring up another tight end through the system, hopefully in a mid to lower round again. They have ways to handle, you know, their situation, but they have the dollars that they need in order to sign some of their third-year guys who are just rolling over to fresh cornerstone contracts. So the big decision that they'll have to make, the tough one, is on whether or not they re-sign Ronnie Stanley. Where are you on that?
I'm pro re-signing Ronnie Stanley. I don't think they have another in-house option. I don't think the free agency is often that great from a tackle perspective. I guess, and we haven't seen enough from Rosengarten to say, oh, well, he could move to left tackle and just be dominant. So, you know, I don't think it's going to take a break the bank deal. And this, I think Stanley looks at it probably as his last contract. So he wants to play. And if he wants to play somewhere, if he wants to play somewhere that's going to win, if he wants to keep playing with Lamar, if the Ravens somehow get to the Super Bowl this year and or win it, then I think all those are reasons why your free agents want to stay on more team appropriate potential deals. Now, the risk there is that Stanley, again, it's his last contract. It's the last bite of the apple that he's going to get. So maybe he does want to get paid, you know, massively. But again, I think these guys want to play with Lamar and you find a way to make it happen.
Yeah, I hope you're right about that, certainly. What else do we want to do about this? I did want to talk about Lamar and his opportunity set. So real quickly, he had three ample time and space opportunities, 15%, 10 ball out quicks, 50%, and 7 pressures. When he had ample time and space, he threw 3 passes for 97 net yards. That included the 53 bagger to Flowers, 32.3 yards per play. You should average around 8.5 on those. For his ball out quicks, you should average about 6 yards per play on those. Those 10 passes, he went 10 for 10, 124 yards, 12.4 yards per pass. Seven times he's pressured, so 35%, which, by the way, that total pressure number is not too high. It's just the pressure to ATS ratio is very bad at 7-3. But he completed three of those six passes for 48 net yards, including the sack. That's 6.9 yards per play. It should be about 3.5. In total, Lamar outperformed his opportunity set by 147 yards in this game. It was 7.4 yards per play above expectation. So that is just absolutely remarkable when you think about, you know, a yards per play number of 7 is good, and he outperformed his yards per play for this opportunity set, which would have been lower than that, by even more than that. So I thought that was truly remarkable.
You know, what's happening, I think, to a degree is, and this is something that I've long wanted to see the Ravens do more of, they have guys living from a route perspective in the 18 to 25 yards down the field range, which it puts the entire defense in a box against Lamar, because you cannot, like, because if you drift back more than 12 yards from the line of scrimmage, Lamar's going to rip you running the ball, and he's going to have space, and he's going to make you look dumb, and it's going to be bad. And you saw from the Flowers touchdown where he makes the incredible play he didn't even break the tackle. I don't think the guy touched him, right. But to avoid the tackle, does that count as a missed tackle? I mean, was there an attempt?
It can if the player takes a really bad angle to the receiver. So I'm not sure how many missed tackles they generate on that play. I think Flowers had two missed tackles for the game.
Should have been like 7 on that play. But on that play, the linebacker basically is frozen in that instance. And if Lamar can make that throw, that he gets it over that secondary defender, mm-hmm. right, who is in position, right? Like, there's nowhere else for that defender to go. If he gets any deeper in that drop, a healthy Lamar is going to run the ball for 20 yards. I don't know what defenses are supposed to do.
Yeah, I mean, if a quarterback can make all the line drive throws just as they're coming open, and it's almost unfair that he can make every up and down throw he needs to. I think that's what you're referring to, because you're seeing the linebacker had effectively that seam dragged, if he was a tight end dragging a seam route, such that Lamar had to throw the ball up and down in front of the safety. It's unfair. I mean, it's completely unfair. There's a great play on the left sideline a couple of weeks ago. I think it might have been against Cincinnati, where he threw it over the guy's head and it right on the sideline. Just like, you shouldn't have even attempted that throw. Honestly, it's a real high risk throw, but Lamar is going to make happen.
The one to Kolar, right? On the outside. So. And it ended up being like a pedestrian, like 9 or 10 or 11 yard game. The throw was incredible. Lamar is just, like you said, those up and down throws where he's throwing them over second level defenders that are watching him to run. And and you've talked about this a lot. Lamar's always been really good at keying leverage to run the ball. Mm-hmm. If Lamar is now getting good at keying leverage to throw the ball,
watch out. Watch out. We did want to talk a little bit about the numbers the Broncos rushed, because there was something that the Ravens did that made the offensive line performance look even worse. So they rushed 3 on 2 plays, 2.0 yards per play. This is pretty good. They rushed 4 on 11 plays, and Lamar racked them up for 18.7 yards per play. So it's nice when you do that against a 4-man pass rush. A 5-man pass rush 6 times, 56 yards, 9.3 per play. I take that also. And the 6-man rush, they ran 1 play for 3 yards. And you can see overall they're somewhere in the 4.4 range, maybe 4.35 range in terms of average number of players rushed per play. Okay. But here's the thing. The Ravens used 15 set and 5 chip blockers on 20 passes in this game. First of all, it's 1.0 per play. But second of all, you typically have a higher ratio of chip blockers among your set and chip blockers who still have an opportunity to run a route. So this is an enormous commitment of eligible receiver assets were made to trying to block up the Denver rush. So a lot of help for tackles, a lot of Hill staying in, being in the middle, and having a choice among of various players to block. But the point is, they really didn't generate an opportunity set that I would hope for, given how much extra they committed to eligible receiver blocking.
Yeah, I think we'll continue to see more of that from the Ravens. I think that we're going to have to continue to see more of that from the Ravens overall.
Pittsburgh, somebody they'll do that a lot against, yeah.
Yeah, and I think even Cincinnati is somebody that they'll do it against. Houston, they're as long as Anderson is back, they're good on the edges too. I mean, when you see some of these elite edge rushers, I mean, Bosa out of San Diego, or not San Diego, Los Angeles. I mean, just who's left on the docket, I think that we'll continue to see this. And it's effective, but Monken also likes to let those guys release. He likes a lot of guys out in space, which is how they create some of the windows that Lamar is throwing into now too. So, I think it's probably what we'll continue to see for the rest of the year too.
It's interesting. This is, the comment about San Diego is something we excuse in ourselves and about Baltimore fans. I remember Jordan actually lives in LA. So the LA Chargers are the home team and yet, sometimes missed. Anyway, that whole year in a soccer stadium was just too weird for a long time. Okay, we'll talk a little bit about the scheme. The running back snap division was a little different this game. They did play zero snaps of Pony. They played 19 snaps of Hill, 35 of Henry in this game, 3 of Collier, which are the first RB3 snaps of the entire year, and kind of a nice parting gift for Collier because he was cut today, of course. I don't know if he'll be back with the Ravens practice squad. He might be. Because he's reasonable backup. He understands the special teams component. He could be, but I don't think there's anything special that he has to be back. But here, the number they found a little more interesting was Hill carried or received the ball on 8 of 19 snaps. It really used him very effectively as a receiver in this game and have now for a number of weeks in a row. And Henry, 24 out of 35 times he was in the game, he either ran the ball or caught the ball or was targeted, I should say. All right, so we'll see what Mitchell can do with regard to this, but my guess is it's the Pony number that is going to go up to get Mitchell his quality opportunities and to get some value out of him while Henry is still on the field. So either of them might get the ball kind of situations.
And I think we might also just see, I mean, he can take a couple snaps away from both guys, right? Like, it's felt a little like, the Ravens have been better about it, but it's felt like when Hill is on the field, they're going to throw the ball. And when Henry's on the field, they're going to run the ball. And it's not been that black and white. But adding a third guy that can actually get meaningful touches within that mix might allow them to potentially mix that up a little bit more. I do, I hope that they start to ramp down a bit of Henry's workload only to just keep him healthy and keep him ready for late in the year. That being said, I don't know that Derrick Henry needs that.
Yes. Derrick Henry, I would agree. I want to see him run the ball less. I'd like to see him run the ball, 17 times a game, have 289 carries for the season. If you can get those in 16 games, I don't have a problem with that. Maybe 18 carries a game for 16 games would be almost exactly the same thing. That'd be fine too. But I'd like to see less than 300 carries for the year. And then go into the playoffs where he's going to hopefully get another, 70, 80 carries maybe if things go really well.
Right. Exactly. No. So I think Keaton Mitchell, I agree with you. I think from a Pony perspective, from the motion perspective, from the speed perspective, I think Keaton Mitchell will, as the Ravens continue to improve as a screen team, all three of these guys can be really good screen running backs too. So there should be plenty of opportunity for all of them to equally share the field. And it's nice to be in this position versus where the Ravens were running back after Mitchell got hurt last year.
Yeah, very, very much so. And the Ravens have often not had really good choices about who is a good pass blocking back. I honestly think each of Hill and Henry brings something that's a little different and both very good to pass blocking. And you don't really want to use Henry for all his snaps there, but he might be the better choice, period. But Hill also he's dogged about his pass blocking, which is really nice to see. He's a high effort guy.
But it gives you the option to also choose, right? So, like, we can move on after this, but if you get a game like the Kansas City game in the playoffs last year where Hill is just not cutting it, pass blocking, you've got three running backs and you can be rotating through all of them, it gives you a little bit more flexibility if you want to make the switch and say, hey, we've got to move a little bit away from Derrick Henry running the ball because we need him in a few more of these pass sets because we're going to keep him in to block. And you've got Keaton Mitchell who's going to be able to pick up a few more carries that you really trust in to be able to hit a home run just like Derrick Henry can, then I'm hopefully the Ravens would be more comfortable with that. I think there was no other option, quite frankly, last year, other than Hill to be able to effectively sure. pass block. And so, you know, giving yourself a little bit more grace there, if Hill's just having a bad game, because sometimes guys do, you can move on.
With everything else that Gus did well, it was kind of a bummer that he never really was a very good pass blocker. They didn't have him in the game on that, but he had the size to do it. He just, for whatever reason, he never really grew into it. 1.81 heavies per play. Now, this got reduced this week and for the wrong reasons, because Likely got hurt, only played 30% of the snaps, 17 in this game. Andrews played 49%, got two targets. Likely didn't had one target, but no catches. Ricard played 36 snaps, 63%, so he led the heavies. Game script obviously related. The 3-yard TD catch I thought was a nice thing to finally get him on the board reception-wise. He's had 1 yard per target the whole year, but he's the only guy who's not excelling in that category. Kolar didn't have a reception, didn't have a target this week. I don't feel like Kolar's been massively under-targeted so far this year, but I think he's about to step into a much bigger target share this coming week with more snaps and more of Likely snaps that he'll be playing.
Yeah, super interesting what's going to happen now that they have Deontay Johnson, right? And so with Likely potentially not being available, and even if he's available, playing less, do the Ravens go more to 11? Do they let Ricard play into that role? Where do we see some of these changes? Does it depend on what the defense is doing? I mean, the Ravens, Deontay Johnson was a really nice addition, and we didn't talk about this, but a really nice addition to what the Ravens could use, right? Especially the way that they're seeing coverages in the secondary, the teams are going to stay heavy up front. Which they have to do because of Lamar, part of which they have to do because of Henry. Then they need guys that are going to be able to separate and get open in the secondary. Deontay Johnson's one of those guys. So it's very possible that Kolar might not see an increase in actual targets, because maybe those targets ultimately end up going to Johnson. Or again, maybe they use Johnson to be able to flex through these receivers. We see a little bit less of Flowers and Bateman as well to keep them fresh and keep them healthy. Maybe you see a little bit less of Bateman to keep him fresher. Maybe that's part of his issue with catching the ball. Who knows? It's just nice that they have all these choices here. You know, even with Likely going out, it doesn't feel like the Ravens offense is going to miss a beat like it did when Andrews went out last year. As in, either Likely or Andrews could be the guy that was going out here, and I would feel the same way.
Right. And I agree. And it was just a feeling, because Likely actually probably outplayed Andrews when he actually got in there and was doing that. But I feel the same way about it. In the case of Deontay, I'm not expecting a high number of snaps for him for the rest of the season. It could occur due to injury, which is the reason they got him. They got him as an insurance policy, not as a frontline player, in my opinion. And he's not that. He's not as good as either Flowers or Bateman. So his job should be basically aiding the misdirection game, improving the 11 package a little bit, kind of like Odell Beckham, you know, could do last year, but not in terms of being one of the primary targets. I just don't see that. You make a very good point, though. A third guy who can beat man coverage, when you want to put that on the field and the other team's really coming after you, that should really help Lamar. So that's a specific niche usage of Johnson that I think could show real dividends this year. I talked about the set and chip blockers. Flowers up to 11.3 ADOT versus the Broncos after 17.3 game against the Browns. Nearly perfect passer rating throwing to Flowers between 10 and 19 yards. Normally, when something's a freak show stat like that, I don't really pick up on it. I don't want to spend a lot of time on it, but it's 20 targets. And the reason I think it's meaningful in this case is that's a lot of the place where he's beating man coverage. It's also a lot of the place where there's a hole in zone coverage and he can come and beat that. He has just turned into this unbelievable weapon, and to see Lamar and he get on the same page the way they have been this year has just been terrific.
Yeah. I mean, I think we all thought that this was possible anyway from Flowers. And so now that we're seeing it, it's just incredible. Good to see him get over that injury, and that obviously not to linger and to be a problem with him. Seems like, you know, small, compact guy, hopefully is able to, doesn't take a lot of hard hits. He's like Lamar in that way. So as long as he can keep that flexibility up and stay healthy in that regard, it's hard not to like him to be finish easily within the top 10 in receiving when it gets to the end of this year, and whether he stays in the top 5 yards. Yeah.
Okay.
And whether he stays in the top, I mean, he's fifth right now, and whether he stays in the top 5, I think, is the question. But unbelievable stuff between them.
He's probably going to have fewer opportunities than a lot of the other receivers who play for bad teams, as any fantasy football owner knows, but he's at 9.8 yards per target. If he could finish at 10 yards per target, if he and Bateman could both be at 10 yards, I would be so excited about that. Can't even tell you. The Ravens receivers, I mentioned early, 10.3 yards per target as a group. When you take the PFF target total for the receivers, that means it basically strips out the throwaways. On the balls that are thrown not as throwaways, the Ravens aggregate passer rating for the year, 133.4. That's in another league. All right. Jordan, always a pleasure.
Yeah, I was just going to say, there's no other comment. It's unbelievable what we're seeing from this Ravens offense. And historically, thinking about who the Ravens are and what they've been, it's pretty incredible to see.
it's a completely different place to be, a completely different way of how to approach a game. And I've been a fan who's always grown up loving defensive football, loving everything about how defenses align, how they stop things, how they, you know, choke the life out of you, how they, you know, win this field position back and forth game, you know, the dime defense and how effective that is. But, you know, this is a lot of fun to watch too. I got to say, having a year of this and then, you know, going to Stathead almost every week and trying to find, well, how many consecutive times has a team outrushed their opponent by 100 yards? And, you know, this was the 42nd time in a row that they crossed the Fangio line of 100 yards rushing. Next week, they have, actually 2 days from now on Thursday, they'll have a chance to tie that record and get a second of the three shares of it. And then presumably they would have a chance against Pittsburgh to break it.
I mean, I'd be surprised if they don't this year. The only thing that would maybe hold that back would be Lamar continuing not to run. But with the way Henry is running the ball, it's very hard to believe it's not going to happen.
Right. I would be a little bit fearful that Pittsburgh could figure out a way to stop the Ravens two or three times to start a game, get out to a lead, and make it more of a Lamar has to pass from behind game. Doesn't mean the Ravens can't win it. It's just, I think they might run the ball less in a game like that. So I'd be concerned about that. But then once Lamar starts getting passing on typical Lamar ways, it ends up being 60 yards of rushing from Lamar. So yeah, hopefully it'll work out either way. Jordan, always appreciate doing the show with you. Always a great back and forth conversation. That was a really good one about the embrace more risk, avoid risk, that I'm going to point to in terms of the promos for the show. But I really appreciate that kind of a high level discussion. Tell folks where they can talk football with you.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Raven Sit Room. Love to chat Ravens with you there. And yeah, thanks for having me, Ken.
Always my pleasure, my friend. Other folks out there, thanks again for being so loyal in terms of listenership to the show. We're having a short week this week, so we'll have the defensive pods, the offensive pods. You're already listening to one of those, so there'll be another one coming out. The second part with Jordan and I are going to record in a moment, and then there'll be two matchups pods as well. Look for those. One late Wednesday, probably one early Thursday, so you're going to have to kind of get them listened to pretty quickly, but they're short before that game starts on Thursday night. Let's go Ravens. Jordan, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
AI of business leaders say AI is a top priority. But with AI tools popping up everywhere, how do you separate the helpful from the hype? The right choice is crucial, which is why teams at one-third of Fortune 500 companies use Grammarly. With over 15 years of experience building responsible, secure AI, Grammarly isn't just another AI communication assistant. It's how companies like yours increase productivity while keeping data protected and private. Designed to fit the needs of business, Grammarly is backed by a user-first privacy policy and industry-leading security credentials. This means you won't have to worry about the safety of your company information. Grammarly also emphasizes responsible AI, so your company can avoid harmful bias. See why 70,000 teams and 30 million people trust Grammarly at grammarly.com/enterprise. That's grammarly.com/enterprise. Grammarly, enterprise-ready AI.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What is... Dax, are you...
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.